The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talkin' Monkeys. I'm your host, Clark Wolf. We are here talking about our favorite show, 12 Monkeys. Thank you all so much for listening. Boy, what a doozy this one was. Fajaland. Fatherland, episode 210. I'm sorry, I had to. Faja. Well, I'm a little punchy. I'm sorry, guys. But we've got a great group of people here to talk about this episode and unpack this really cool episode, starting with the lovely, wonderful, gorgeous Miss Amanda Shule.
I was waiting to see who got all those wonderful attributes.
That was
attributes.
You.
Thank you
it's
so much.
It's not
going to
be Chris or I.
the absolutely not cold Amanda. No. And then we also have Mr. Sean Tretta.
Hello.
And Mr. Chris Monfett is joining us again.
Hello.
Thank you for everybody for being here. Okay, so lots happened. We'll just go ahead and dive in. It's Berlin. It's 2016. And we open by seeing the striking woman, Olivia. She is being wheeled into a lab, and it is not a good scene. That's what I wrote down. Not as in the quality of the scene, but as in, like,
thanks.
This situation. Guys, this scene sucks. No, it's not a good situation for her to be in, obvi. And, yes, something bad has happened here. But that's all we get. Just a little taste, just a little flavor. We hop back to 2044, and Whitley and Deacon and company are on a mission for Jones. They're outside, and the red storm is fast and quickly approaching. And there's a little boy. A little boy comes, you know, he's in, find him in the whole. He comes out of the storm, yeah? And then he goes right back into that storm. And so let's talk a little bit about this.
Well, I think what happened is the kid has been part of this survivor camp out there and has escaped the destruction of the Red Forest and is now on his own. He's probably lost his entire family, sees these guys, but this storm is still approaching. Yeah. And probably getting nearer and nearer to the temporal facility, you know, by the second. So, you know, this kid's sort of just given up and he's gone.
That was a really bold choice. I mean, really, I mean that. Like, the idea that even children are like, nope, I'm out. This is totes
that
not worth it.
Just drops the mic on his life with, you know, pretty definitively.
Yeah.
The apocalypse sucks.
I'm out. So, all right, dire situation here. Once Deacon and Whitley come back and everybody sort of gathers together to have a conversation, they're essentially faced with two missions that they could theoretically go on. The first is to go back to 1957 because they're trying to prevent a paradox from happening. And that's Cole is really on board with this mission. Meanwhile, the other option is to try and go to 1961 because this CIA report that Ramsey and Cassie walk away from the keeper with the information basically says Titan, and they think this is where they gotta go. So there's obviously a huge disagreement here. There's not enough time for both. The storm is quickly approaching. And Jones, to harken back to our conversations throughout the podcast about hope and hope, you know, this show potentially being a very hopeful show, which I would argue it mostly is. Jones says, look, I would rather bet my life on a mission, one of hope, not revenge, which basically gives the answer, you're going back to 1957 and to handle this paradox. Meanwhile, Dr. Adler, so this is really interesting. I love how this has been built in. Dr. Adler has lost his child in the plague, and he, you know, like Ramsay tries to relate to him because, okay, this is, yes. So Cassie and Ramsay are like, listen, you're the one who programs all this stuff. Like, don't you think we need to go take out the witness instead? And Ramsay tries to appeal to him as a father who's lost his child, but Adler is not having it, which I very much enjoyed. But this is a really complex and complicated situation. I think it's this episode that Jones basically kind of was like, look, I got my daughter back. He's never getting his child back. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's real weight and stakes and consequences for these people in their personal lives. You know, one of the things that this is quite a monologue I'm giving.
Go for it.
I apologize, but love it. One of the things that I really, really like about this show is the show deals in such big picture issues, you know, the fate of the world and timelines. And it's so big. And yet we know all these characters so intimately that they're always still people. They're people that you can, like, if you think about Dr. Adler, you can picture him going back to his quarters and being there and thinking about his child and the isolation and what he didn't have and what he doesn't have, you know, and every character is like that. Like, I found myself recently thinking about Whitley. I was like, where'd he go? You know, like, but really being like, you know, what's he up to? What's he doing? So I apologize for going on.
All those things are abstracts, right? Like, yeah. The end of the world is an abstract. I mean, you can't, you know, hopefully in our lives, we will never experience that, you know, in reality. And so, it only means anything if it means something to you. And so bringing these things and making them personal experiences. And then also, this is a good moment and it's a good scene where we kind of get to say that there are no background characters in the show. There right. are no unimportant characters. That even this character who has for the majority of 12 Monkeys been sitting at that desk helping Jones do what she does gets to have a moment of weight and consequence. So.
Also, side note, we heard Eklund make a comment to Jones a couple episodes ago about how he sees the way that Dr. Adler looks at her. So, I mean, it's been hinted that he has, you know, feelings for Jones, and then Jones gets something that he wishes he could have. There has to be a lot of resentment as well.
It's you know, you sometimes wish we were, you know, you know, with commercials, we're 42 and change or whatever, yeah. But you wish we're an hour show because, you know, you want to do big stories for, you know, all these characters like Whitley, you know, would love to get deeper into Whitley. And I love Adler. I'd love an Adler episode, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, you, whenever there's an opportunity to sprinkle stuff into their stories, we jump at it because they're fun characters.
And we're also very fortunate that we can do that in small ways because we have big actors who can take a small moment and give it a ton of meaning. And so, you know, just the distance that they can carry that emotionally, even if it's just a small scene in a hallway or something, is a blessing.
Yes. Well, a scene that comes kind of immediately after that, which is no small scene, is Deacon comes to visit Cassie. And as I give some side eye over here to Amanda, Cassie. Okay, so Deacon comes and it is he's a bit awkward, which is something that I don't feel like we've seen from this character before, right? Tough guy who murders people and all this stuff, but there's something about Cassie and their relationship that
he reverts back to the child he was when he first saw her, I think.
Yes. So that was a very interesting revelation. And if I'm recalling correctly, Cassie's kind of like, I don't want
to. Well, you know, to give some backstory to shooting that scene, we shot it a few different ways and we ad-libbed it. And we tried it where it sort of escalated into an argument, which I don't think is how they ended up going with it.
No, definitely.
Yeah, we tried it out that way to where it was sort of like she was forced to just kind of finally say, like, you know, enough. It was just one time. My God, put the candle out. Get over it. You know, that kind of a thing. But we also tried it different ways where, and there have been a few just hints that when he walks in the room, if people go back and see a couple of the times ever since Cole got back to the facility in 2044, every time Deacon walks into the room, there's a little bit of discomfort for Cassie. And it hasn't been, you know, very heavy-handedly played out, but there have been a couple of times where you just see her kind of close her eyes. She's like, oh, this is not comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then it's finally comes to the forefront in this scene where he walks in and he says, I knew things wouldn't be great the second that Cole got back. And it's, she doesn't want to have to admit it, but it's also just, gotta be seriously talking about this. Like, just give it up.
Yeah.
And this is not the, this is not what, where I thought we'd be.
But if I may, the line, you know, Cassie says it was just one night, but he comes right back and says, well, you came to me. And I was like, ooh, very telling. I mean, I'm not passing judgment, but yeah, I mean, I'd like to
hear. This is not something, Sean Tretta is giving me a look, just for those of you who can't see this look. This is not a new behavioral trait for Cassie, by the way. If we recall, sort of in a moment of desperation and sadness and loneliness in Haiti, that
absolutely.
She seeks comfort.
Hey, no judging. I'm not judging at all. I want to be very clear.
What are you going to say, Sean?
Well, no,
what?
I wasn't going to disagree with anything of it. Like, I think the, you know, thing people, I think, constantly sort of forget is that there was almost a year where Cassie was in the future and there was no Cole.
Thank you for bringing that. I should definitely have led
so,
with that.
And so, you know, a lot can happen in a year.
And we
especially,
also don't know where in that year this moment that Deacon is describing occurred, whether it was, you know, sort of closer to the way that you saw Cassie in season one or the person that she sort of evolves into over that year. So,
but it's very true, and I should definitely have led with that. I was sort of being cheeky and stupid. But the it's true that there's been almost a year. There has been almost a year where she doesn't think she's ever going to see Cole again, by the way, ever at any point. He doesn't have a tether. She doesn't know where in the world he may be, where in the time he may be. The last time she saw him, he was with Ramsey. There's a very strong possibility that Ramsey then killed him.
Sure, of course.
She does not believe that she's ever going to be reunited with this person with whom she has this inexplicable bond.
Yep.
So Deacon has been a mentor to her. He's probably saved her life on a number of occasions. And she believes that the world is coming to an end. She is seeking comfort and, you know, just, I think, solace. And then the sun comes up the next day.
Sure.
And they're alive.
Yep. Well, actually, I would like to ask one more question about this scene, about this exchange, because Deacon, very, you know, seemingly pretty hurt, says you finally fit in around this place. And my question is, you know, we've seen this evolution for Cassie. We've seen an evolution of toughening up and not being able to, not wanting to deal with emotions, like, you know, kind of putting a stop to that. My question is, how does Cassie react to this, it being said in such plain language? Like,
well, it's a little bit like it's a burn. Yeah. It's a sting for him to just kind of say it. It's childish. I don't think she dwells a lot on what he said. I don't think that there's time to dwell on what he said, but there's obviously truth to it. And you can take it in a number of ways, where you finally fit in around this place to mean that you're finally just looking out for number one and not caring about who you sort of leave in your wake. But you can also look at it as you finally fit in around this place where you're not allowing yourself to have a normal human relationship or bond. And she fits both of those criterion, I think.
Sure.
It's oddly insightful on Deacon's part, in a way, to know that
that
statement...
I don't think he means it to be insightful,
that, but that statement would potentially bother you, that he means it as a burn at all, because the inference there is that you would be bothered by the fact that you were potentially... had gotten that hardened and sort of that rooted in the apocalypse, that your point of view had shifted so significantly. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, okay. So after this exchange, the three splinter. So that's Cole, Cassie, and Ramsey. And, you know, they're sitting drinking in a bar. They kind of, Cole is slow to,
they're putting on a show.
Yeah, they
sure
are.
Putting on a show. They're basically conning him. He thinks it's all good. The two people that are most important in my life are here and actually getting along. This is pretty great. And, oh shit, yeah, they fucked me over.
Yep, big time. Big time. And you know what I liked was I know Terry is a huge Back to the Future fan, and seeing John F. Kennedy on the screen, I thought of that scene in Back to the Future where they said, bring up Kennedy, and he says, who the hell is John F. Kennedy? And that was kind of like my clue to be like, uh-oh, they are not in 1957. They yeah. are in 1961. Mm-hmm. So they appealed to Adler. He did it. You know, we have that confrontation that comes later.
A lot of betrayal in this yeah. episode. This but is it's not about without betrayal.
Remorse. I mean, it's not cold-hearted betrayal. Mm-hmm. I just want to further that point.
Listen, yeah, yeah. They're, you know, Cassie and Ramsey firmly and very strongly believe in what they're doing. I mean, am I correct? Like, they believe that what they believe doing is right.
I think somebody says it at some point. They believe they're cutting the head off the snake.
Yes.
They believe this is extinguishing yes. the threat in almost in totality. So why wouldn't people be with them?
Yep.
You know, doing Cole's mission just sort of sets them, buys them some time.
Right.
And they can't even wrap their head around why they would want to buy a little bit of time when they can just fix everything yep. in one mission.
Yeah.
And there are a handful of episodes throughout the series that I sort of refer to as like writer's room episodes, which is they're yes. the episodes that sort of germinate from arguments that we
sure.
in the room have about what stories do we want to tell and sort of where, what paths are branching in which direction. And we'll have a lot of spirited debate about, well, should they be pursuing the messenger? Should they be pursuing the virus? Should they be pursuing the witness? And when you have those and you sort of reach that impasse sometimes, the best decision is, well, then that's the story.
Yeah.
You know, that's the argument for our characters. Let's not have it amongst ourselves. Let's let them have it.
Sure. So what when Cole finally comes to, what he realizes is that Cassie and Ramsey have gone to Germany. And so who are you going to call? And
call Gale.
Call Gale. I was so happy to see him.
Agent Gale's the best.
That was so great. What a fun surprise. And you know, he just he's such a cool character, and he and Cole have this great relationship. And I believe it's here where Gale kind of, you know, Cole kind of allude, or somehow they allude to the fact that they haven't seen each other in X amount of time, and Gale kind of goes, sure.
Okay, yeah, we're playing that game. Okay. Could open the door. I'm not going to say anymore.
I sure hope so, because poor Gale. Gale doesn't make it out of this episode, y'all.
Would redact everything you're about
yeah.
to say.
Yes,
so, yeah.
He would. He would indeed. All right, so we are going after the objective, the person that they are going after that they believe is going to lead them to Titan is Kirshner. Mm-hmm. And Ramsey and Cassie find him at the opera. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that dress was beautiful.
Thank you.
And it looked beautiful on you.
Oh, thank Wardrobe you very
does
much.
A great job on this show.
Yes.
Joyce yeah. sure does a fantastic job.
Yeah. yeah.
We went through a number of potential looks, a number of colors and looks until we ultimately decided on that one.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So they, you know, come up with a way to, well, they show him, you know, they kind of let him know, hey, you know, we got your number.
Send him a note.
Yep, send him a note. And so he comes out, but
They're not alone.
Yeah, not alone. Mossad is there as
yes,
well.
Yes.
So I'd love to ask you guys real fast about the historical implications here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was this concept of the Mossad soldiers, you know, tracking certain people mm-hmm. based in
Nazi
history?
Hunters? Yeah,
yeah, totally.
Absolutely. They were cleaning people up. And if you've seen, you know, I think, well, what's the Spielberg movie?
Munich.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, they sort of had this mandate is like, we're going to track down every one of these guys. And they certainly were after Kirshner, which is really unfortunate for Ramsey and Cassie that, you know, this sort of happened simultaneously. And in the process of questioning Kirshner about what he knows about Titan, Cole shows up with Gale, and everyone realizes the CIA report said Titan because you guys said Titan.
That was so great.
And it was like, whoops.
That was so great. Mm-hmm. Like, boy, what a big mistake, what an honest mistake.
Yeah.
And also, it didn't, you know, like sometimes when the audience goes, oh shit, I never would have thought of that. Like it was like, it didn't feel like a cheat at all. It was just like, that's, you guys got me, like very clever.
Yeah.
Very clever.
And Cole, if anybody has made that mistake before, it's Cole.
Oh, definitely.
So it's, you know, it's, yeah. He's earned the right to give someone crap about it.
My office this season abutted Oliver, the writer for this episode, abutted his office. And anytime I would sort of have to pass through it, you would sort of like look at his desk or you'd talk to him. And it looked like he'd gotten like his junior detective kit, like like in 1960s. Like he was researching how to like, you know, when did the wall go up and how could you get across it? And it really looked like he was training to be like a spy. Like I was waiting to walk in and have like a fedora. And
yes.
How fun is that though? I mean, how many writers get to have that kind of research for a show?
Oh, I
think that's so exciting.
Yeah.
You know? And especially on a show that, when would you ever think that you're writing for 12 Monkeys, you would be able to research.
Do a 60s spy segment.
If you could see our collective Google histories, it would probably be just like the weirdest thing. It'd be like Cold War and how do you make a knife out of a human bone?
Yeah. Like, you know. How to start a plague.
Yeah, definitely not doing anything weird over here, government. So I, you know, before Cole and Gail show up, you know, the Cassie and Ramsey are being interrogated. But there's a scene where, you know, this guy, I don't remember his name, but the man who basically beats up both of them.
Yeah, the Mossad.
Yeah. So he goes down pretty hard on Cassie. And what I was sort of interested in was Ramsey. Ramsey is not cool with this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would hope that any gentleman watching this unfold would not be cool with punching a lady in the face. Mm-hmm. Sure. But, aside from that, is this a signal that maybe Ramsey is starting to consider Cassie as an ally and a friend?
I think that part of that is that she was willing to go on this mission with him.
Mm-hmm.
She agreed to his plan and spoke against Cole.
Right.
And so he realizes that she's in it. You know, she's in on this mission for the reasons that he was hoping and that they are, you know, on the same page.
Sure.
And so he would be that angry if somebody were hurting Cole as well. I think he now looks at her as a partner,
okay,
as an ally.
Yeah, they're bonding. I mean,
good.
Yeah.
Love it. All right.
And they probably talked about all their feelings on the plane ride.
Oh my gosh. So many feelings. I bet they sat next to each other. They braided each other's hair.
Let's lie detector test again.
What's your favorite secret? Okay. So.
It's the greatest post-apocalyptic game of Never Have I Ever.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Never Have I Ever killed a scav with. Dad's those are in the bloopers. Okay, so they are able to escape, right? They take Kirshner and they realize they've got to cross this wall. Everybody makes it except Gail. Oh boy. That was unfortunate.
Goes out like a hero.
He sure did. And God, by the way,
in
that
a beautiful black backlit silhouette.
That was
being
a pretty
shot up.
Amazing set that they constructed for us. I mean, that was just in some dirt abandoned lot. They did a fantastic job creating that, and the barrels were very much appreciated. We shot all of. Almost this entire episode was constructed of night shoots. So we are shooting from basically, you know, you get to hair and makeup around 4:30 in the afternoon and you work until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
It was rough, you know, and when we got there, I think we shot that night stuff. It was also drizzling. It was cold and running through. It was such a challenge, but it really lended itself to the whole feel of the situation.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then to have to take 45 bullets at the end of it, I'm sure, probably.
I know.
Yeah.
He's like, I get to go in my trailer now where it's warm.
So Gail turns into Swiss cheese and the crew continues on. They get to this lab and Kirshner warns them. He's like...
And also, let's just say, Cole's furious that Gail even had to do that. He's already angry that the two of them had... done this plan and pulled the wool over his eyes, he's furious that his friend has now died because of their actions.
Yeah, that is absolutely very important because that comes into play much later.
Yeah, I mean, Cole's had two episodes of dealing with very reckless people.
Yeah.
And the hyenas and now, you know, Cassie and Ramsay, and he's just like...
By the way, he's leaping no look, so taste of his own medicine, Cole.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's true. It's very, very true. Okay, so they get to the lab and Kirshner is like, listen, you guys are not going to like what you're going to see in here, so you better just be ready. And what we learn is that he had been working in eugenics. He had been working with the witness. And something I neglected to mention earlier was Cassie does notice the pendant around his neck when they are, you know, in the previous location. And also... that he recognizes Cole's name. He says, the witness has spoken about you often, a lot, which I was like, oh, interesting.
Well, we do find a copy of the word.
Oh, my God.
A copy of the word of the witness.
How did I skip that?
You were getting there.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's a lot to this.
They're going to take my microphone away from me.
You know, but, you know, in Kirchner's telling of his story, too, we get the sense that maybe he was contacted by someone who could possibly have been...
the witness? Yeah.
Yeah, there is that implication that of all the characters we have met in the entire show to this date, that Kirchner might have been the one who actually had the most direct contact with this figure.
I get what you're saying. Yes.
And so I think this is there also when they realize this and when Cassie finds the pendant, the emblem.
Yes.
I think that there's a little bit of indication that they were on the right path there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That validation, I think, is really important because before that comes and Cole says, listen, knuckleheads, you are the one who said it. This clue, you completely screwed up. But... you know, the realization of not so fast, we're not complete idiots. But I would imagine that would also be a situation where Cassie's kind of like, oh God, thank goodness, because I would have been really embarrassed or felt...
I don't think she would have been embarrassed.
Embarrassed is probably the wrong word.
Yeah, I think she would have found a way to turn it around.
Okay. Wow.
She's adaptive.
That's great. What we are led to believe that Kirshner is doing is creating the messengers, right? So he's engineering... these people with special abilities, essentially. So what we find is a little girl. There's a little girl in this little girl two-way mirror bedroom, which is super disturbing. I think everybody in that scene, the characters all react like, this is
sick.
Yeah. This is getting real
and
weird.
Hopefully we've distracted you enough at this point that you've forgotten that this is the exact same window and room that Olivia... visited earlier in the episode.
Because you know what's so funny is I didn't remember that it was the exact same room. It wasn't the location, but I was
it looks a lot different.
But I did kind of go, oh, I bet that's Olivia.
Yeah.
That's what it was. So it's Olivia. And that comes into play a little bit later. But okay. So while they're in this place, the word of the witness, let's talk about this because we've talked about it before on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Terry has it framed in his office. And there's so much on there. It's overwhelming. But this is a document that have we only seen it once before?
Yeah, we saw it in Bodies of Water when Jennifer found it.
Episode 5.
Yeah, when in the 12 Monkey Mansion. And it's missing its upper right-hand corner, which we, in this episode, discover why that happened, why it's missing. Because Ramsay saw a Titan thing, and Titan is the thing that Ramsay is obsessed about. And he, you know, in a situation where Cole's trying to save people and... you know, do the right
Cole
thing.
Cole almost implies, though, I thought in that scene that to kill the little girl. No, nobody else felt that way. There was a big silence. He says, the girl, Ramsay,
girl. They think they need to,
I thought they were going to try to take her out.
Oh.
No? You didn't think
pretty,
that?
Pretty cold, Cassie.
Oh, no!
I mean,
Take
that striking woman out before she becomes a woman,
right?
Y'all.
Well,
I don't know if they've quite...
You gotta do what you gotta do.
Put the pieces
striking
together
baby,
for
just,
it, yeah.
Take that striking girl out.
Striking toddler.
Strike that down. No? Okay. I'm alone on that. Okay.
It's, yeah, get the girl because the girl is the key. She is the evidence path, that the clue path.
So don't kill her.
Well, whatever. It may get to the point you get that little girl and you realize that's what we have to do. But I think he's like, the girl is the key, not because Cole's thinking messengers, Red Forest, the girl. Let's, you know, we need to stop that. And Ramsey's thinking Titan. And so that's, you know, that division is like the, what the last half, the last section of this season is about. Yeah. And it's huge.
And Ramsey turns out to be the best speed reader I have ever seen episode. I stared at that map for like half an hour trying to figure out what was on
it's
it.
It's in bold, yeah. I think.
A man on a mission.
He was
doing it linearly, so he just went right across.
He's just reading
up,
right? Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, basically what has happened previously, which I did glaze over on purpose, was Jones has found out what Adler did. And Adler has said, you know, I gave him 4 days. That's when they're coming back. And Jones is just livid. So, of course, she's get him out of here, like put him with, you know, and he has to lock him up essentially in his quarters. But now her team is scrambling to bring you guys home. So the clock is ticking. And as a result, you guys splinter.
Yeah, that's right. We splinter from right at, well, sort of the best moment because Scotty Thompson, who is Mantis, shows up, starts shooting at us. So it's really convenient that we get out of there.
Definitely.
But we don't get all the evidence we want, save from this one little tiny bit.
Yes, indeed. And when you guys get back to 2044, boy, oh boy, this is not a good situation. If Cole was mad before, boy, he's pissed now. And you know, Jones is really, really angry too. They're both furious. The storm is growing. It's getting closer and closer and closer. And Cole essentially throws down the gauntlet and says, lock him up. Your mission's over. Like, this is done. And what was crazy hard to hear was, you know, Cassie says exactly. And his response of, you know, there is no we. Not anymore. This is done. I mean, was Cassie surprised that he was so angry?
Of course.
Can you talk a little bit about maybe, like, you know, look, they're dedicated to the mission, and I'm sure, and that was the mindset. But what do you think Cassie thought the reaction would be from Cole?
Hurt, but he'd look past it. I think he'd be able to forgive and move forward because he would understand where she was coming from. This all came from a place that led him to insist that Ramsey shoot him, you know, from the witness possessing her. Cole should understand that this is as important as it is to her, and he doesn't. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even want to hear her side of things. He somehow elects himself general of the situation and gives himself the power to lock her away and Ramsey away. But most importantly, because I'm play the role of Cassie, I care most about that.
Sure.
It's also such a bold and hurtful move for their relationship. It's not just, you know, her mission is now, you know, cut short.
Yeah.
It's also that he's saying there's no we, which is devastating.
Real fast, before we wrap up, is that any sort of, is he still freshly hurt from the romantic, you know, like, okay, she's not into it, or is it purely mission-based?
I think Cole and definitely Cassie, to an extent, have the ability to separate their emotions from their drive. So I think Cole in this moment, it's not sour grapes because she wouldn't kiss me.
Of course.
I think it's, it's they're running out of time. And, you know, he believes wholeheartedly that the mission to stop the messengers is the most important thing.
Sure.
And the other side believes wholeheartedly the opposite. And so there is only enough time to pursue one path.
Yep.
And he's like, you forced me into this position here where I'm going to have to sideline you because
But I the fact that he wouldn't even want her help, he wouldn't even want a partner going forward, is really intense, because even on the show, we've seen enemies align with one another for a common purpose. The fact that he believes so strongly against what the two of them did that he is willing to imprison them and not even get their help going forward, that he's willing to basically get the leftovers and not the A team, is heavy.
It does dovetail interestingly with, the theme of the previous episode, which is that idea of learning how to lead and coming into your own. And this is, I think, to date, the most sort of dictatorial decision that Cole has made. And it's one that has great cost to his personal relationships and people that he cares a great deal about. And this is an instance where, for whatever emotional reason, he's actually able to sort of, I was going to say splinter those two things together, and make a decision that is sort of contrary to maybe what his heart is telling him.
Sure. And Jones backs him up. So, there you go. All right. So I have to mention real fast before we go, and I know we're running out of time. We're all going to bolt out of here so our cars don't get tickets. But Olivia, so we've got to mention real fast that we, as we mentioned before, the little girl is Olivia. However, we see her essentially present 2016. She renounces the witness. She's like, I'm done with you, witness. She doesn't say that, obviously, but that's what we're, we see it happen, and that is huge for her character.
We connect a lot of dots with Olivia. We understand, her aging process, where she comes from. She's actually, it's a djinn. She helped develop and raise the messengers, and one of them turns out to be sort of the biological origin of her herself, almost her mother, who we get a sense probably had a hand with Mantis in raising her some. So, since she's a messenger and she heals quickly, we see her rise out of that wheelchair, and that's, I would say, very symbolic of what is going to happen with Olivia.
Oh boy. Only what? 11, 12, 13.
11, 12, 13 coming up. And woo-hoo! It is going to be spectacular, guys. 11 is amazing. And all this emotional roller coaster stuff that we've been talking about is going to come to a head.
Guys,
I think it's entirely possible that people will invent time travel to be able to get to the next episode of these last trio of episodes.
Your mind will be blown over and over and over again over the next three episodes.
I cannot wait. All right, Miss Amanda, where can the people find you on social media?
Amanda Shule.
And Sean.
At Sean @Tretto.
And Chris.
At CW Monfett.
And I am at Clark Wolf. Clark with an E, Wolf with an E. Thank you for joining us. Like the podcast, share it, rate it, review it. Tell your friends about 12 Monkeys, all that good jazz. We will see you next week.